Chapter 6. "Yes," said our father, when Jem asked him if we could go over and sit by Miss Rachel's fish pool with Dill, as this was his last night in Maycomb. "Tell him so long for me, and we'll see him next summer." We leaped over the low wall that separated Miss Rachel's yard from our driveway. Jem whistled Bob White, and Dill answered in the darkness. "Not a breath blowing," said Jem. "Look a-yonder." He pointed to the east. A gigantic moon was rising behind Miss Maudie's pecan trees. "That makes it seem hotter," he said. "Cross in it tonight?" asked Dill, not looking up. He was constructing a cigarette from newspaper and string. "No, just the lady. Don't light that thing, Dill. You'll stink up the whole end of town." There was a lady in the moon in Maycomb. She sat in a dresser, combing her hair. "We're going to miss you, boy," I said. "Reckon we better watch for Mr. Avery?" Mr. Avery boarded across the street from Mrs. Henry Lafayette DuBose's house. Besides making change in the collection plate every Sunday, Mr. Avery sat on the porch every night until 9 o'clock and sneezed. One evening, we were privileged to witness a performance by him which seemed to have been his positively last, for he never did it again so long as we watched. Jem and I were leaving Miss Rachel's front steps one night when Dill stopped us. "Golly, looky yonder!" He pointed across the street. At first we saw nothing but a kudzu-covered front porch, but a closer inspection revealed an arc of water descending from the leaves and splashing into the yellow circle of the streetlights some 10 feet from source to earth, it seemed to us. Jem said Mr. Avery misfigured, Dill said he must drink a gallon a day, and the ensuing contest to determine relative distance and respective prowess only made me feel left out again, as I was untalented in this area. Dill stretched, yawned, and said altogether too casually, "I know what, let's go for a walk." He sounded fishy to me. Nobody in Maycomb just went for a walk. "Where to, Dill?" Dill jerked his head in a southerly fashion. Jem said, "Okay." When I protested, he said sweetly, "You don't have to come along, Angel May. You don't have to go, remember?" Jem was not one to dwell on past defeats. It seemed the only message he got from Atticus was insight into the art of cross-examination. "Scout, we ain't going to do anything. We're just going to go to the streetlight and back." We strolled silently down the road, listening to the porch swings creaking in the weight of the neighborhood, listening to the soft night murmurs of the grown people on our street. Occasionally, we heard Miss Stephanie Crawford laugh. "Well," said Dill. "Okay," said Jem. "Why don't you go on home, Scout?" "What are you going to do?" Dill and Jem were simply going to peep in the window with a loose shutter to see if they could get a look at Boo Radley, and if I didn't want to go with them, I could go straight home and keep my fat, floppy mouth shut, that was all. "But what in the same holy hill did you wait till tonight?" "Because nobody could see them at night, because Atticus would be so deep in a book that he wouldn't hear them kingdom coming, because if Boo Radley killed them, they'd miss school instead of vacation, and because it was easier to see inside a dark house than in the daytime. Did I understand?" "Jem, please." "Scout, I'm telling you for the last time, shut your trap or go home. I declare that to the Lord you're getting more like a girl every day." With that, I had no option but to join them. We thought it was better to go under the high-wire fence at the rear of the Radley lot. We should stood less of a chance of being seen. The fence enclosed a large garden and narrow wooden outhouse. Jem held up the bottom wire and motioned Dill under it. I followed and held the wire up for Jem. It was a tight squeeze for him. "Don't make a sound," he whispered. "Don't get in a row of collards. Whatever you do, they'll wake the dead." With this thought in mind, I made perhaps one step per minute. I moved faster when I saw Jem far ahead beckoning in the moonlight. We came to the gate that divided the front garden from the backyard. Jem touched it. The gate squeaked. "Spit on it," whispered Dill. "You've got us in a box, Jem," I muttered. "We can't get out of here so easy." "Shh, spit on it, Scout." We spat ourselves dry, and Jem opened the gate slowly, lifting it aside and resting it on the fence. We were in the backyard. The back of the Radley house was less inviting than the front. A ramshackle porch ran the width of the house. There were two doors and two dark windows between the doors. Instead of columns, a rough 2x4 supported one end of the roof. An old Franklin stove sat in a corner of the porch. Above it, a hat-rack mirror caught the moon and shone eerily. "Arr," said Jem softly, lifting his foot. "'S matter?" "Chickens," he breathed. That we would be obliged to dodge the unseen from all directions was confirmed when Dill, ahead of us, spelled G-O-D in a whisper. We crept to the side of the house, around to the window, with a hanging shutter. The sill was several inches taller than Jem. "Give you a hand up," he muttered to Dill. "Wait, though." Jem grabbed his left wrist to my right wrist. I grabbed my left wrist to Jem's right wrist. We crouched and Dill sat on our saddle. We raised him and he caught the window sill. "Hurry," Jem whispered. "We can't last much longer." Dill punched my shoulder and we lowered him to the ground. "What did you see?"
"Nothing.
Curtains. There's a little teeny light way off somewhere, though."
"Let's get away from here," breathed Jem. "Let's go around in the back again."
"Shh,"
he warned me as I was about to protest. "Let's try the back window."
"Dill, no," I said. Dill stopped and let Jem go ahead. When Jem put his foot on the bottom step, the step squeaked. He stood still, then tried his weight down by degrees. The step was silent. Jem skipped two steps, put his foot on the porch, heaved himself to it, and teetered a long moment. He regained his balance and dropped to his knees. He crawled to the window, raised his head, and looked in. Then I saw the shadow. It was the shadow of a man with a hat on. At first I thought it was a tree, but there was no wind blowing, and the tree trunks never walked. The back porch was bathed in moonlight, and the shadow, crisp as toast, moved across the porch towards Jem. Dill saw it next. He put his hands to his face. When it crossed Jem, Jem saw it. He put his arms over his head and went rigid. The shadow stopped about a foot beyond Jem. Its arms came out from its side, dropped, and was still. Then it turned and moved back across Jem, walking along the porch off the side of the house, returning as it had come. Jem leaped off the porch and galloped towards us. He flung open the gate, danced Dill and me through, and shooed us between two rows of swishing collards. Halfway through the collards I tripped. As I tripped, the roar of a shotgun shattered the neighborhood. Dill and Jem dived beside me. Jem's breath came in sobs. "Fence by the schoolyard! Hurry, scout!" Jem held the bottom wire. Dill and I rolled through and were halfway to the shelter of the schoolyard's solitary oak when we sensed Jem was not with us. We ran back and found him struggling in the fence, kicking his pants off to get loose. He ran to the oak tree in his shorts. Safely behind it, we gave way to numbness, but Jem's mind was racing. "We gotta get home. They'll miss us." We ran across the schoolyard, crawled under the fence to deer's pasture behind our house, climbed our back fence, and were at the back steps before Jem would let us pause to rest. Respiration normal, the three of us strolled as casually as we could out to the front yard. We looked down the street and saw a circle of neighbors at the Radley front gate. "We better go down there," said Jem. "They'll think it's funny if we don't show up." Mr. Nathan Radley was standing inside his gate, a shotgun broken across his arm. Atticus was standing beside Miss Maudie and Miss Stephanie Crawford. Miss Rachel and Mr. Avery were nearby. None of them saw us coming up. We eased in beside Miss Maudie, who looked around.
Where were you all? You didn't hear the commotion?"
"What happened?" asked Jem.
"Mr. Radley shot a Negro in his collared patch."
"Oh, did he hit him?"
"No," said Miss Stephanie. "Shot in the air. Scared and pale, though. Says if anybody sees a white nigger around, that's the one. Says he's got the other barrel waiting for the next sound he hears in the patch, and next time he won't aim high, be it dog, nigger, or Jem Finch."
"Ma'am."
Atticus spoke. "Where's your pants, son?"
"Pants?"
It was no use. In his shorts before God and everybody. I sighed. Mr. Finch?" In the glare from the streetlight, I could see Dill hatching one. His eyes widened, his fat cherub face grew rounder.
"What is it, Dill?" asked Atticus.
"I won 'em from 'em," he said vaguely.
"Won them? How?"
Dill's hand sought the back of his head. He brought it forward and across his forehead. "We were playing strip poker up yonder by the fish pool," he said. Jem and I relaxed. The neighbors seemed satisfied. They all stiffened. What was strip poker? We had no chance to find out. Miss Rachel went off like the town fire siren. "Doo, Jesus, Dill Harris, gambling by my fish pool? I'll strip poker you, sir." Atticus saved Dill from immediate dismemberment. "Just a minute, Miss Rachel," he said. "I've never heard of him doing that before. Were you all playing cards?" Jem fielded Dill's fly with his eyes shut. "No, sir, just with matches." I admired my brother. Matches were dangerous, but cards were fatal. "Jem, scout," said Atticus, "I don't want to hear of poker in any form again. Go buy Dill's and get your pants, Jem. Settle it yourselves."
"Don't worry, Dill," said Jem as we trotted up the sidewalk. "She ain't going to get you. He'll talk her out of that. That was fast thinking, son. Listen, you hear?"
We stopped and heard Atticus's voice. "Not serious. They all go through it, Miss Rachel." Dill was comforted, but Jem and I weren't. There was the problem of Jen showing up with some pants in the morning. "I'd give you some of mine," said Dill, as we came to Miss Rachel's steps. Jem said he couldn't get in them, but thanks anyway. We said goodbye, and Dill went inside the house. He evidently remembered he was engaged to me, for he ran back out and kissed me swiftly in front of Jem. "You all right, you hear?" he bawled after us. Had Jem's pants been safely on him, we would not have slept much anyway. Every night sound I heard from my cot on the back porch was magnified threefold. Every scratch on the feet of gravel was Boo Radley seeking revenge. Every passing Negro not laughing in the night was Boo Radley loose and after us. Insects splashing against the screen were Boo Radley's insane fingers picking the wire to pieces. The chinaberry trees were malignant, hovering, alive. I lingered between sleep and wakefulness until I heard Jem murmur, "Sleep, little three eyes? Are you crazy? Shh, Atticus's light's out." In the waning moonlight, I saw Jem swing his feet to the floor. "I'm going after him," he said. I sat upright. "You can't. I won't let you." He was struggling into his shirt. "I've got to." "You do, and I'll wake up Atticus. You do, and I'll kill you." I pulled him down beside me on the cot. I tried to reason with him. "Mr. Nathan's going to find him in the morning, Jem. He knows you lost him. When he shows him to Atticus, it'll be pretty bad. That's all there is to it. Going back to bed." "That's what I know," said Jem. "That's why I'm going after him." I began to feel sick. Going back to that place by himself, I remembered Miss Stephanie. Mr. Nathan had the other barrel waiting for the next sound to be heard, be it nigger, dog. Jem knew that sound better than I. I was desperate. "Look, it ain't worth it, Jem. A licking hurts a lot, but it doesn't last. You get your head shot off, Jem, please." He blew out his breath patiently. "It's like this, Scout," he muttered. "Atticus ain't never whipped me since I can remember. I want to keep it that way." This was the thought. It seemed that Atticus threatened us every other day. "You mean he's never caught you at anything?" "Maybe so, but I just want to keep it that way, Scout. We shouldn't have done that tonight, Scout." It was then, I suppose, that Jem and I first began to part company. Sometimes I did not understand him, but my periods of bewilderment were short-lived. This was beyond me. "Please," I pleaded, "can't you just think about it for a minute by yourself at that place?" "Shut up. It's not like he'd never speak to you again or something. I'm going to wake him, Jem. I swear I am." Jem grabbed my pajama collar and wrenched it tight. "Then I'm coming with you," I choked. "No, you ain't. You'll just make noise." It was no use. I unlatched the back door and held it while he crept down the steps. It must have been 2 o'clock. The moon was setting and the latticework shadows were fading into fuzzy nothingness. Jem's white shirt tail dipped and bobbed like a small ghost dancing away to escape the coming morning. A faint breeze stirred and cooled the sweat running down my sides. He went the back way through deer's pasture, across the schoolyard, and around to the fence, I thought. At least that's the way he was headed. It would take longer, so it was not time to worry yet. I waited until it was time to worry and listened for Mr. Radley's shotgun. Then I thought I heard the back fence squeak. It was wishful thinking. Then I heard Atticus cough. I held my breath. Sometimes, when we made a midnight pilgrimage to the bathroom, we would find him reading. He said he often woke up during the night, checked on us, and read himself back to sleep. I waited for his light to go on, straining my eyes to see it flood the hall. It stayed off, and I breathed again. The night crawlers had retired, but ripe chineberries drummed on the roof when the wind stirred, and the darkness was desolate with the barking of distant dogs. There he was, returning to me. His white shirt bobbed over the back fence and slowly grew larger. He came up the back steps, latched the door behind him, and sat down on his cot. Wordlessly, he held up his pants. He lay down, and for a while I heard his cot trembling. Soon he was still. I did not hear him stir again. Chapter 7. Jem stayed moody and silent for a week. As Atticus had once advised me to do, I tried to climb into Jem's skin and walk around in it. If I had gone alone to the Radley place at 2 a.m, my funeral would have been held the next afternoon. So I left Jem alone and tried not to bother him. School started. The second grade was as bad as the first, only worse. They still flashed cards at you and wouldn't let you read or write. Miss Caroline's progress next door could be estimated by the frequency of laughter. However, the usual crew had flunked the first grade again and were helpful in keeping order. The only thing good about the second grade was that this year I had to stay as late as Jem, and we usually walked home together at 3 o'clock. One afternoon, we were crossing the schoolyard home. Jem suddenly said, "There's something I didn't tell you." As this was his first complete sentence in several days, I encouraged him. "About what?" "About that night." "You've never told me anything about that night," I said. Jem waved my words away as if fanning gnats. He was silent for a while. Then he said, "When I went back for my breeches, They were all in a tangle when I was getting out of them. I couldn't get them loose. When I went back, Jem took a deep breath. When I went back, they were folded across the fence, like they were expecting me. Across and something else. Jem's voice was flat. I'll show you when we get home. They'd been sewed up, not like a lady sewed them, like something I'd try to do. It's all crooked. It's almost like someone knew you were coming back for them. Jem shuddered, like someone was reading my mind, like someone could tell what I was going to do. Can't anybody tell me what I'm going to do now, thus they know me, can they, Scout? Jem's question was an appeal. I reassured him. Can't anybody tell you what you're going to do, lest they live in the house with you, and I can't even tell sometimes. We were walking past our tree. In its knothole rested a ball of gray twine. Don't take it, Jem, I said. This is somebody's hiding place. I don't think so, Scout. Yes, it is. Somebody like Walter Cunningham comes down here every recess and hides things. We come along and take them away from him. Listen, let's leave it and wait a couple days. If it ain't gone, then we'll take it, okay? Okay, you may be right, said Jem. It must be some little kid's place. Hides his things from the bigger folks. You know, it's only when school's in that we found things. Yeah, I said, but we never go there in the summer. We never go by here in the summertime. We went home. Next morning, the twine was where we had left it. When it was still there on the third day, Jem pocketed it. From then on, we considered everything we found in the knothole our property. The second grade was grim, but Jem assured me that the older I got, the better school would be, that he started off the same way, and it was not until he reached the sixth grade that he learned it, that one learned anything of value. The sixth grade seemed to please him from the beginning. He went through a brief Egyptian period that baffled me. He tried to walk flat a great deal, sticking one arm out in front of him and the other in back of him, putting one foot behind the other. He declared Egyptians walked that way. I said if they did, I just didn't see how they got anything done. But Jem said they accomplished more than the Americans ever did. They invented toilet paper and perpetual embalming, and asked where we would be today if they hadn't. Atticus told me to delete the adjectives, and I'd have the facts. There are no clearly defined seasons in South Alabama. Summer drifts into autumn, and autumn is sometimes never followed by winter, but turns into a days-old spring that melts into summer again. That fall was a long one, hardly cool enough for a light jacket. Jem and I were trotting in our orbit one mild October afternoon when our knothole stopped us again. Something white was inside this time. Jem let me do the honors. I pulled out two small images carved in soap. One was the figure of a boy, the other wore a crude dress. Before I remembered there was no such thing as hoodooing, I shrieked and threw them down. Jem snatched them up. "What's the matter with you?" he yelled. "Here are the figures, free of red dust." "These are good," he said. "I never seen any of these good." He held them down for me. They were almost perfect miniatures of two children. The boy had on shorts, and a shock of soapy hair fell to his eyebrows. I looked up at Jem. A point of straight brown hair kicked towards from his part. I had never noticed it before. Jem looked from the girl doll to me. The girl doll wore bangs. So did I. "These are us," he said. "Who did 'em, you reckon?" "Who do we know around here who whittles?" he asked. "Mr. Avery?" Mr. Avery just does like this. I mean carves. Mr. Avery averaged a stick of stovewood per week. He honed it down to a toothpick and chewed it. "There's old Miss Stephanie Crawford's sweetheart," I said. "He carves all right, but he lives down in the country. Why would he ever pay any attention to us? Maybe he sits on the porch and looks at us instead of Miss Stephanie. If I was him, I would." Jem stared at me so long, I asked what was the matter, but got nothing, Scout, for an answer. When we went home, Jem put the dolls in his trunk. Less than 2 weeks later, we found a whole package of chewing gum, which we enjoyed, and the fact that everything on the Radley place was poison, having slipped Jem's memory. The following week, the knothole yielded a tarnished metal. Jem showed it to Atticus, who said it was a spelling medal, that before we were born in Macomb County, schools had spelling contests and awarded medals to the winners. Atticus said someone must have lost it, and had we asked around? Jem camel-kicked me when I tried to say where we had found it. Jem asked Atticus if he remembered anybody who had ever won one, and Atticus said no. Our biggest prize appeared 4 days later. It was a pocket watch that wouldn't run, on a chain with an aluminum knife. "You reckon it's white gold, Jem?" "Don't know. I'll show it to Atticus." Atticus said it would probably be worth $10, knife, chain, and all, if it were new. "Did you swap with anybody at school?" he asked. "Oh, no, sir. Jem pulled out his grandfather's watch that Atticus let him carry once a week if Jem were careful with it. On the days he carried the watch, Jem walked on eggs. "Atticus, if it's all right with you, I'd rather have this one instead. Maybe I can fix it." When the new wore off his grandfather's watch, and carrying it became a day's burdensome task, Jem no longer felt the necessity of ascertaining the hour every 5 minutes. He did a fair job, only one spring around and two tiny pieces left over, but the watch would not run. "Oh," he sighed, "it'll never go. Scout?" "Yeah?" "Do you reckon we ought to write a letter to whoever's leaving us these things?" "That'd be right nice, Jem. We can thank 'em. What's wrong?" Jem was holding his ears, shaking his head from side to side. "I don't get it. I just don't get it. I don't know why, Scout." He looked in toward the living room. "I've got a good mind to tell Atticus." "No, I reckon not." "I'll tell him for you." "No, don't do that, Scout." "Scout?" "What?" He had been on the verge of telling me something all evening. His face would brighten and he would lean toward me and then he would change his mind. He changed it again. "Oh, nothing. Here, let's write a letter." I pushed a tablet and a pencil under his nose. "Okay. Dear Mr. How do you know it's a man? I bet it's Miss Maudie. Been betting for a long time." "Miss Maudie can't chew gum." Jem broke into a grin. "You know, she can talk real pretty sometimes. Once I asked her to have a chew and she said no thanks, that chewing gum cleaved to her palate and rendered her speechless," Jem said carefully. "Doesn't that sound nice?" "Yeah, she can say nice things sometimes. She wouldn't have a watch and chain anyway." "Dear sir," said Jem, "we appreciate everything which you have put into this tree for us. Yours very truly, Jeremy Atticus Finch." "He won't know who you are if you sign it like that, Jem." Jem erased his name and wrote, "Jem Finch." I signed, "Jean Louise Finch, Scout," beneath it. Jem put the note in an envelope. Next morning, on the way to school, he ran ahead of me and stopped by the tree. Jem was facing me when he looked up and I saw him go stark white. "Scout!" I ran to him. Someone had filled our knot hole with cement. "Don't you cry now, Scout. Don't cry now. Don't you worry," he muttered at me all the way to school. When we went home for dinner, Jem bolted his food, ran to the porch, and stood on the steps. I followed him. "Hasn't passed by yet," he said. Next day, Jem repeated his vigil and was rewarded. "Howdy-do, Mr. Nathan," he said. "Morning, Jem, Scout," said Mr. Radley as he went by. "Mr. Radley," said Jem. Mr. Radley turned around. "Mr. Radley, did you put cement in that hole in that tree down yonder?" "Yes," he said. "I filled it up." "Why'd you do it, sir?" "Trees dying. You plug 'em with cement when they're sick. You ought to know that, Jem." Jem said nothing more about it till late afternoon. When we passed our tree, he gave it a meditative pat on its cement and remained deep in thought. He seemed to be working himself into a bad humor, so I kept my distance. As usual, we met Atticus coming home from work that evening. When we were up at our steps, Jem said, "Atticus, look down yonder at that tree, please, sir." "What tree, son?" "The one on the corner of the Radley lot, coming from school." "Yes? Is that tree dying?" "Why, no, son, I don't think so. Look at the leaves. They're all green and full. No brown patches anywhere." "It ain't even sick?" "That tree's as healthy as you are, Jem. Why?" "Mr. Nathan Radley said it was dying." "Well, maybe it is. I'm sure Mr. Radley knows more about his trees than we do." Atticus left us on the porch. Jem leaned on a pillar, rubbing his shoulders against it. "Do you itch, Jem?" I asked as politely as I could. He did not answer. "Come on in, Jem," I said. After a while, he stood there until nightfall, and I waited for him. When he came into the house, I saw he had been crying. His face was dirty in the right places, but I thought it odd that I had not heard him.